Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM, your drive time show. And we're here again until the hour of six, as always, to keep you company while you focus on the road and make sure that you don't have any distraction, be it from a cell phone or, you know, whether it's electronic or psychological, just, you know, we all have that going on. Just try to fight it. Try to fight it and focus on the road. Then when you get home and you are safe, then you can just get a few of, you know, the well-known compatriots like, you know, Jägermeister, MBK, Tombo, you know, to help deal with it. If you take my advice on that one, that's on you. But anyway, joining you this afternoon is, of course, as always, Helmut and Dwight.
Helmut, the little remedy you mentioned there, was that something you dabbled in once?
Definitely not talking from experience.
I'm just making sure. Because, you know, okay, since there is this weird particular thing going on here in the capital, I don't know, but obviously people would obviously be running for their remedies as fast as possible or as far as possible. Mm-hmm. I don't know where, in which directions, but they're running. The downside has obviously been something of many people forget sometimes to just go like, you know what, let me just drink vitamin C or just drink fine vitamin C supplement somewhere. But we always forget to do that because tomatoes are also vitamin C's. I'm not going to be playing doctor, guys, and I'm not going to tell Helmut not to tell you guys or not to tell him to share his, you know, his household concoctions with you. That's up to you. The discussion obviously from this is something based upon, you know what?
Yeah.
It's always best to just go and sleep. Just go and sleep. Just go
so
and rest.
So sleep also is sleep works.
Sleep is one of the best remedies as long as you've eaten. Uh-huh. You've taken in your fluids like water and whatever hot drink you like to drink sometimes. Not the hot stuff. Hot drink.
Not hot. Now this is hot in temperature.
Yeah. It's a warm drink.
Yeah.
Please, guys. So, yeah, obviously starting in earnest with our discussion for today, welcoming on your drive time program from 4:30 to 6, where we obviously dissect, you know, the particular interesting developments that are happening everywhere else in the world, which also includes Namibia, and how it impacts you in that scenario. For today's particular discussion, we have to extend a little bit of an apology, dear listeners, because somewhere along the line, once again, it was a communication gremlin that sort of like kidnapped.
To commit murder again.
But the question is whether or not we could commit murder because...
No, we like our freedom and salary so much.
Plus, we also like being diplomatic and all that. However, we are somewhat applying a little of passive aggressiveness here on for something we asked a long time ago. But anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, so... Ignoring now the passive aggressiveness that we were slightly applying.
Yeah.
Our discussion, dear listeners, for today is based upon a conversation that's currently happening right now in Lomé, Togo, from yesterday up until tomorrow, Wednesday, the 14th of May, which is Africa's debt conference or conference on debt or,
debt conference.
Yeah, whichever way you throw the words of debt and conference debt or debt on conference or conference of debt or stuff like that, it's the same thing. You'll get the same result. Reason as to why this particular discussion, we're having this discussion is because this single talking point is always brought up at the UN General Assembly's helmet. It's always brought up at the Conference of Parties Engagement for Climate Change. It's always brought up at any other multilateral platform where you've got all these nation leaders participating in these platforms. And every time they bring up this discussion of the debt that we carry, we can't borrow more. We're told we're borrowing too much. We are engaging supposedly in some sort of weird investments in our countries. Mind you, you can slightly exclude SADC from this particular discussion. I say slightly, not all.
Not fully.
Slightly. Because predominantly you've got to look at the insights being given, and SADC in its own right has a development mechanism, and SADC in its own right is trying to achieve an enhanced level of integration, which includes economies. Meaning SADC is, and there is such a piece of paper, that SADC has put together, has authored about their strategy to become an economically integrated region on Africa. That exists, which is, it's mind-boggling, Helmut. The same thing also exists from the AU side. The AU does have a document that say they want to achieve the economic integration of the continent. They wish to achieve, and one of the pathways is obviously through the AFCTA. Now, we've got two voices here that obviously also lend some more particular insights in terms of this debt conference discussion, but the discussion is primarily based upon from what you can see and hear in the talks, in the audios that will come through from the gentleman, Mr. Claver Gadete from the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa, and then you've got the gentleman, Mr. Moses Vilakazi, who is from the AU Commission for
Economic Development, Trade, Tourism, Industry, and Minerals. That's a mouthful.
Ah, man, you just hit it on the head right there. I wanted to write the little abbreviation for it, ETIM or ETITIM or something like that.
Yeah, it's a double T, so it's just.
But it keeps throwing me off because I keep forgetting whether the E is environment or in economic or whatever. But yeah, so Vilakazi and Gatete will give you the particular insights that they will obviously, that's born from their particular speeches that they read at this event yesterday, at the start of this conference. But here's the interesting thing, Helmut.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, for like the other people that were speaking, like the president of Togo, there was another president speaking there as well. They were speaking in French.
Uh-huh.
The biggest concerns that I could not see into, because obviously, you know,
it's a different language.
The translations weren't there immediately, you know, to try and decipher, or there wasn't a voice, you know, there was someone, a translator speaking there on site.
You know what's more annoying?
Yep.
I see this even in movies sometimes, you know, you turn on subtitles.
Yeah.
And then the only subtitle that comes up is, speaking Japanese, like what the heck?
Which movies are these from, Helmut? Because I know YouTube has that automatically. You can change the thing.
Yeah, the translation. Yeah, that one is there. But yeah, well, some of the translations come through. Especially, I've seen this. My movies are acquired in somewhat unorthodox way. So, well, that explains some of the translations. But the subtitles, when you turn on the subtitles, you know, some parts, especially of foreign languages, are translated, and then some parts it just indicates that speaking French. Like, okay. Now.
But that's was the reason why we got Vilakazi and Katete, because they literally came and said the thing.
In English.
In a French-speaking country, in English.
Yeah.
So it was easy for us, because
because Togo's official language is French.
It's French, yeah.
It's a former French colony.
And it was easy for us to now obviously understand from what their two takes were, you know, ultimately, what's this conversation or level of conversation going to look like? And even the concept note, Helmut, in preparation for our discussion today, the concept note was also just as insightful, because the concept note actually speaks about statistics that I've been trying to look for post-COVID. So our listeners will be obviously asking, so what's the discussion here? So the discussion here, dear listeners, is that the African leaders have realized that they are paying for too long the time frame. They are continuously paying just to service debt.
And it keeps rising.
And it keeps becoming more and more. They can't borrow anymore. If they try to go and access money or to borrow, they're being told, you know, what are the conditions? Please say yes to our conditions. And anyone that highlights, yeah, you shouldn't agree to conditions, but that's the thing. You also say yes to conditions when you go and apply for a loan at a bank.
You don't even read. You just, you know. Yeah. Where do I put my initials?
No, you are told, here's our conditions. Please satisfy these conditions and then we'll dispense the money to you.
Yeah.
And some of these particular talking points is that people think you can wangle your way out of, you can politically wangle your way out of debt. The unfortunate thing is most of these countries have to pay their debts. And these are debts that have been building up before COVID. And if we bring in a negative discussion once again, guess who? Mozambique. If we bring in Mozambique into this equation, just to highlight to you, dear listeners, the minister, that former minister of finance, and the but it was people from the same party. What's the party's name? The ruling party.
Wait.
Of Mozambique, the one that won elections just now.
Was that not Frelimo?
Frelimo, yeah.
Yeah.
They are all from Frelimo. That what happened with that former finance minister and the president's vice, the president's son,
and I the think other the people. Vice president was also involved in.
Yeah, they were all from the same ruling party. What did they try to do, Helmut?
Which was an SOE.
No, it wasn't just an SOE. They were trying to hide the debt from Parliament.
After they borrowed it.
Yeah, after they wasted the money, they were trying to hide the debt from the Parliament.
This is the problem that I keep, this is the problem that I keep seeing, because one thing is, how the heck do you hide $2.2 billion
US dollars?
US dollars.
Not even 2.2 billion NAM or RAND, US dollars. And the weird thing is here, Helmut, is that
$2.2 billion?
This debt discussion is nothing new.
It's nothing new.
It's nothing new in the context because, look, I can understand certain countries obviously being influenced negatively by debt or historical debt. Case in point, let's take a look at Haiti.
Yeah.
Haiti is one such negatively impacted country because Haiti has on its books a debt for it achieving independence from France.
Yeah.
It has to pay France and the United States.
Their only mistake was their only crime was fighting for independence.
Yeah, that's the only crime, dear listeners. Yeah. If you ever look up into why Haiti is Haiti today, it's primarily because there is either it's some sort of sanctions that are taking place, plus this debt that they've got to pay back to France and the United States. And the worst thing is when people talk about it, it doesn't gain traction. Because every time when people ask, what is going on in Haiti? Why can't Haiti just pull itself together?
Yeah.
The downside, unfortunately, about Haiti is there are structural issues. There are structural issues embedded in the, if I can call it sort of like the maelstrom of Haiti's, inability to act or function as a stable country.
Yeah.
And that's obviously besides the gangs. Taking things over there in Port-au-Prince. But getting back to our Africa discussion, here's a unique thing, Helmut. Now, in this particular concept note that the ETA team guys had established, that obviously highlights what they're going to talk about, they note here that according to the AU's statistics, in the 1980s, Africa experienced severe debt crises, multiple crises, not crisis, not one, multiple, dear listeners, that led to economic stagnation and reversals in living standards. Africa's external debt grew by 187% from $39 billion to $112 billion between 1976 to 1980. This means this debt is still not done. This debt is not done, Helmut. These guys are saying this is debt that grew. This debt still lies somewhere. Here's the worst part. This crisis continued to escalate with external debt ballooning from $140 billion. Remember that? So between 1980 and 1982, it grew from 112 to 140. So 28 billion more was added on top of that for borrowing in 1982. And it then grew from 1982 to 1990 to 270 billion. Helmut, this concept note there was put together just last week. I always look at time, you know, timestamp. When was this document literally created?
Yeah.
This debt exists somewhere still on the African continent. 270 billion by 1990. Someone is owing this 270 billion.
And it's going to be paid in one way or another.
Exactly. We then fast forward to 2010 to 2020, that 10-year period.
Yeah.
Africa's external debt had increased more than fivefold and accounted for almost 65% of the whole country, of the whole continent's GDP in 2023. So you take that 270 billion and you multiply it by five. It's more than a trillion US dollars by 2023.
I mean, I'm not a statistician or math expert, but anything above 50% of your GDP, that's not good enough.
No, it's not good. But it's not a question of, look, the existence of the thing sounds already sketchy. But if you understand what the debt is used for, you know, like...
That's another question.
Like having reporting functions that tell you what this money was used for that was borrowed.
Isn't that what led to, you know, what's one of those questions that the Kenyan youth were asking during the tax bill protest?
Exactly.
The money that was borrowed now that's leading to you increase the tax increase the taxes on a lot of products.
Yeah.
That means we have to pay off a debt that we borrowed at some point. The question is, the money that we borrowed, can you show us the evidence on what it was used for?
And then they realized.
And then
what did they find? All the subsidies that the lawmakers were getting. Because remember, the Kenyan youth last year, they were angry at, doesn't matter what political party you were from.
No.
They were angry across the
entire
board.
Government.
They were, no, not government.
The whole,
all policymakers, they were angry at
the whole parliament ran out.
Yeah. So the parliament guys couldn't even, give an explainer, and none of them actually gave an explainer because all the explainers came from the central government.
Yeah.
But the central government is, the executive.
Yeah.
The parliament needed to explain why they were allowing a bill to borrow more money that would lead to more taxes being increased, because that was one of the methods.
Yeah.
Increase taxes. They needed to explain themselves. They didn't explain themselves. They didn't. And which was one, like you said, which was one of the facts that the Kenyan youth asked.
They were like, okay.
Why should we have more taxes placed on us? But we look at the lavish lives that politicians live, which is a very valid question, which has been a question that has been coming out of Europe as well, Helmut. If you're going to give people, if you're going to tax people more, right? If you're going to tax people more, you should be giving them what you tax them for, you should be giving them service delivery from it.
Who is this? John Stewart did a segment on the taxes, comparing American taxes with some of European countries. He used the Scandinavian countries.
Yeah.
And then
Is it on that podcast of his, or is it on the Daily Show?
I think that was on the Daily Show.
Yeah.
Yeah. What he was basically looking at was people's reaction. Yeah, when just common people in the street, like you'd see easy vloggers walking around with a microphone and a camera, asking people what their take on a certain take, for example, policy or certain social situation that's going on in their country. And one of the questions now for that segment, the question that was asked is, what do you think about the taxes or the level of taxes that you are being taxed in your country? Mm. Now, a lot of Scandinavian countries, their response to it, which is something that, which is very funny, that because if you look at Scandinavian countries, their taxes are through the roof.
Yeah.
Yeah, like they are really high.
Just go to Germany, the taxes are through the roof.
Yeah, but a lot of them, their response was, the taxes are high, but, That's more like on the negative side, but there's a positive side to those high taxes,
yeah,
which is I don't have to worry about public transport because it's subsidized. I don't have to worry about my kids going to, going to school because yeah. that's subsidized.
And you don't have to worry about not having adequately trained teachers because the teachers have sufficient.
Are well paid.
They yeah. get housing as well.
Yeah.
You also don't have to worry about university because in Germany, the universities are for free.
The health sector, the services are also top notch because everything is subsidized. So exactly. a lot of them. But the thing is, when American citizens were asked that question of what their take on the taxes, a lot of them gave negative answers, which translates to one thing. The Scandis are happy because, well, even though the taxes are high, the services they are told, their tax money was used to fund, those services are delivering at least to some, you know, to a higher degree compared to a lot of, a lot of countries with similar, you know, with similar levels of taxes.
Yeah.
So it's not really, so at this point, I think it's safe to, to put it in a very simple way that, it's not, okay, borrowing money, it's, you know, it's bad, but it's not as bad as we like to put it out.
Yeah.
It's for one, what you are using the money for.
Or, and how is it used?
Yeah.
Because that's also one of the particular discussions here, Helmut, that I actually realized every year, for example, like when, the former finance minister, Shimi, was, yes. Finance minister. And now with the new minister as well, when you look at their budget statements, yeah. They always tell you what was done, how was it done, what you can look out for, and what it is being doing. They always tell you, every finance minister has always told the Parliament National Assembly, what we're tabling, what we're placing in front of you here mm-hmm. as a budget for the country is a budget so that the country can function.
Now, I think of one, the elephant in the room when it comes to debt for a lot of developing countries. And we saw this with, especially the one famous situation of Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
We saw this with Mozambique. And we see the Kenyan youth asking the same same question over and over again. And a lot of citizens pretty much throughout the developing world will ask the same question.
Yeah.
We have a problem with with the government borrowing money, but we can actually understand if the money being borrowed translates into something that is visible in terms of services of service provision or products being produced locally that's coming from that money.
Mm.
But most of the stories that you often hear is a lot of it is used to subsidize politicians' lifestyle, if not just flat out stolen in case that we witnessed in case of Mozambique.
Yeah.
So the biggest issue now in the debt discussion, especially coming from citizens to their leaders, is not much about borrowing, but about the money that's being borrowed. How is it used?
What is it used for?
But the main question obviously is this money used on something that the people on the ground can feel that there is a change in their lives that's emanating from the money that's, from the money that was borrowed?
Mm.
That's where I think our biggest problem now comes in, because obviously, we spend giant portions of our national budgets, national annual budgets, on operations. A lot of it is spent on mostly salaries.
Yeah.
Now, because a lot of it is spent on salaries, only a very small proportion of it is left to, is left to fund projects on the ground. As a result, not a lot of people can actually tell you that this is what is happening in terms of change. Which is why you pointed, I keep going back to think, to something that you keep pointing out that, the GDP analysis type of like, this is an average GDP for a country
yeah.
is somewhat deceiving, because a lot of people will ask you that, okay, if this is how much money this country has, why don't I have a job?
Exactly. And if you look at what makes,
why can I afford bread?
What bolsters that GDP statistic? Then you could see Oh, but it's a sector I cannot perform in.
No.
Or it's a sector I cannot break into. Or it's a sector I cannot participate in before the ad break hits us anyway. But when we look at that particular discussion, Helmut, there's another thing, and it's the reason why I said we've got to keep Namibia out of this, this debt conference discussion that's happening on the continent, out of this scenario. Because here's the ad break now.
Are you still buying data hoping it will last? Then switch to Paratus. Buying gigabytes is so old school. With our mobile LTE prepaid packages, you take charge. As we invest in time on our network, enjoying the freedom of uncapped data. When you buy a 1-day, 7-day, 14 or 30-day package, you get uncapped data usage. For the duration of the package, no matter how much data you use. Explore our range of Paratus mobile LTE prepaid packages and enjoy the speeds of up to 10 megabytes per second. And most importantly, remove the uncertainty about how long your data will last. Contact us today at 083-300-1000 or visit our website at www.paratus.africa/Namibia. Terms and conditions apply. Always Paratus.
Welcome back. The time is just a minute past the hour of 5. And if you just tuned in, you're listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. So just finish your point so we can get to the audios here.
Yeah. So the particular point, Helmut, that was highlighted, why I said you've got to keep SADC partly out of this discussion. It's not to say that SADC is free from debt. No. We actually use it. And Namibians also see specifically how government, most government operations, well, most of you that obviously, like Helmut, likes to celebrate every 20th.
When is it
coming up again? Is it this Friday?
Oh, hang on a second.
Today's the 13th.
The 13th, yeah.
Or is it next week?
I need to call my teacher friends. I know it's next week, Tuesday.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so nice.
Now is the right time to start, calling them, checking up on them.
We're not putting you guys under pressure. Please, guys, don't worry. But, for example, every 20th,
For example,
the teachers in the public sector know that the teachers and the police in the public sector know that they can get their salaries.
Yeah.
People can see where the money works. You can see it. You can feel it. The downside of this particular discussion has been Namibia has advanced or morphed to such a stage where you have, like earlier today, the CEO of the ECB had to say any price changes that they implement as a regulator has an impact on consumer price, the consumer price index in terms of affordability. That is where Namibia has morphed to. But when you go look at some of the these other African countries, Helmut, I ask the question still. That $1.3 trillion as at 2023, who's owing that money? Is it the AU as an entirety? Or is it some of these West African and North African guys who are just not probably opening up their books to say, you know what, this is what we actually owe. But when you go look at IMF and World Bank records, which are public records,
you will get an
idea of like, oh, so holy that's cow. How much money you actually owe.
Yeah.
So the particular discussions here are pretty weird. And why I say it's pretty weird is we need to understand on this continent some of the structural issues that are in existence in some of these African countries and why you potentially see, for example, like the SADC region advancing slowly but surely, but they're advancing as a bloc. They are enriching each other. They are developing each other. Mm-hmm. They are investing in each other and they're moving forward. The downside here is, does the rest of the African continent have the same capability? And that's the particular point. But yeah, Hamoud, we've got to highlight to the listeners some of the audios before the next ad break.
Yeah, coming from the conference.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build. Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. 5 minutes past the hour of five. Let's get to the audios. We start with Gatete from what I like to call as a UNECA, aka United Nations. What's that now? United Nations Economic Commission. For the Africa Division.
This historical inaugural African Union debt conference under the theme Africa's Public Debt Management Agenda in Restoring and Safeguarding Debt Sustainability. I wish to begin by commending His Excellency Faure Gnassingbé, President of the Republic of Togo, and the African Union Commission for convening this vital platform at this defining inflection point in Africa's development journey. Excellencies, this conference could not be more timely. Across the continent, access to concessional finance is narrowing, while tariff escalations are weakening market access for African goods. For many of our countries, this translates into higher borrowing costs, reduced export revenues, and tighter budgets, at a time when fiscal expansion is essential for inclusive growth. Indeed, as we convene, Africa is not merely confronting a debt crisis. It is facing a development crisis, one where debt servicing competes directly with health, education, infrastructure, and the fundamental right to development. The question is, what kind of solution do we need, and how urgently can we deliver it? Let us start with the sobering facts. In 2024, Africa's total public debt shot up to $1.86 trillion, with average debt to GDP ratio rising from 44.4% in 2015 to 66.7% today. Across the continent, more than 20 African countries are either already facing debt distress or on the brink. When debt repayments outweigh investments in health and education combined, we must question the sustainability and human cost of our fiscal path. Can we or should we accept the reality where repaying the debt takes precedence over protecting lives and nurturing human capital? Furthermore, it is unacceptable that today only two African countries are rated investment grade. Is it the cause that our fundamentals are so weak, or are we being measured by outdated methods and narrow perceptions that fail to account for Africa's potential? And if Africa, that holds 30% of the world's critical minerals, 60% of the arable land, and the youngest population on Earth, is not considered bankable, then who is? Yes, we need to provide the necessary capacity to countries to improve their ratings, but transparency is very key. This notwithstanding, Excellencies, we must also confront the reality of the changing global landscape. The international financial lifelines we once relied on, including the official development assistance, are fading. Today, 83% of USAID programs have been cancelled, and the traditional partners are tightening their budgets. Meanwhile, the cost of capital has surged, and the G20 common framework, unfortunately, remains slow, opaque, and creditor-biased. Faced with these headwinds, we have no choice but to chart a bold and principled new path. And in this respect, allow me to outline five critical imperatives to reshape Africa's debt landscape and restore fiscal sovereignty. First, we must reframe debt as a tool for development, not destruction. We must keep in mind that debt is not inherently bad. What matters is what it is used for. In this regard, ECA champions a development approach where borrowing is tied to productive investments in energy, infrastructure, industry, and related services. Simply put, we must stop borrowing to consume, but rather borrow to transform. Second, we must deepen transparency and strengthen debt management. Africa needs comprehensive country-owned strategies that capture all liabilities, including those from state-owned enterprises. Transparency must evolve into a culture of accountability, building trust with citizens and investors alike. And ECA is working closely with the African governments to provide technical support, data analytics, and digital debt management tools to support this. Third, we must urgently reform the global financial architecture. The current system, regrettably, is no longer fit for purpose. The G20 common framework must be transformed to become more predictable, inclusive, and equitable. It must also welcome middle-income countries, bring private creditors to the table earlier on, and be guided by the UN's 9 core principles, from sustainability to sovereign immunity. In this spirit, we must accelerate the establishment of the Africa Credit Rating Agency, an institution that understands Africa's realities, reflects its potential, and restores fairness to the global perception of African risk. Its objective is not to replace the existing rating agencies, but to complement them with greater transparency. Fourth, it is imperative to scale up innovative and green finance. Africa must lead in deploying instruments like green bonds, blue bonds, and sustainability-linked debt to unlock climate-aligned capital. Moreover, debt for climate and debt for nature swaps offer pathways to ease fiscal pressure while investing in our planet. Countries such as Cabo Verde, Gabon, Seychelles, and Morocco are already showing the way, and ECA remains committed to providing the required technical support, capacity building, and championing initiatives like the Sustainable Debt Coalition. Fifth and last, no solution is complete without strengthening domestic resource mobilization. This means expanding and digitizing our tax base, closing leakages, leveraging technology, and combating illicit financial flows, which cost Africa over $88 billion every year. It also requires the development of robust and inclusive capital markets that can channel domestic savings into productive investments, provide long.
Welcome back. Debt is not inherently bad. It's not bad, debt itself. It's not bad. It's what it is used for. That is the voice coming out of the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa. Now, that's very true for a country as it is for an individual or an institution.
And you and I said that. You and I literally said that.
Yeah.
Helmut, you and I literally said that before we even switched on the audio to tell the listeners. There's nothing wrong with debt.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with debt.
It's just a question of how this money is used and whether or not you can actually see it do certain things. But I actually had a weird particular thing, Helmut.
Yeah.
I was asked by someone when I made that same particular statement, and the person told me, but go and look at Necartal, Dwight. Necartal is not yet repaying on its investment. It's not yet converting itself. But here's the thing.
Yeah.
That is still a work in process because the whole installation of Necartal is semi-finished. The next level is most that it has to feed an irrigation scheme around it, which is
one of money,
which has to start making money.
Yeah.
But the one guy that I interviewed was here last year in 2023, where the guy said the irrigation scheme that dam actually has to feed the other irrigation schemes, and I was like, wow. But yeah, ad break, and we come back after it.
Do you urgently need cash and happen to own a car? Creditors delaying and contractors need to be paid? When life throws you a rainy day, AutoCash got your back. Park your car and get up to 45% of its value within 45 minutes. No payslip, no bank statement, just the car. Moolah when you need it.
Easy money.
Call us today on 061-400-676. That is 061-400-676. AutoCash, it's that simple.
Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards, and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.
Welcome back. We are going to take a live read before we bring you the next audio. If you just joined us, you are listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM.
Velvice University, where everyone is an achiever. Online qualifications, postgraduate programs, for June 2025, intake applications are now open. Velvice University is inviting applications into the below mentioned online postgraduate programs for the June 2025 intake. For more information and applications, you can visit our website at www.wu.edu.na. For postgraduate diploma in occupational health and safety, level 8, to enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF level 7 qualification in a related field. The duration for this course is 1 year blended. Master of occupational health and safety, to enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF level 8 qualification in a related field. 2 years blended course in terms of its time length. Postgraduate diploma in higher education level 8, to enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF level 7 qualification in a related field, and this is a 1 year blended course. Master of Higher Education, to enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF level 8 qualification in a related field, and this is a 2 years blended qualification. All programs are fully accredited by the NQA.
Welcome back, and the time is 18 past the hour of 5. We are going to continue by sharing with you the next audio coming out of the Africa Debt discussion taking place in Togo, and it's ending tomorrow. And the next voice is one of Moses Vilakazi, coming out of the Economic Development, Trade, Tourism, Industry and Minerals Organization. That's still a mouthful. From here on, henceforth, we are going with ETIM.
Yeah, that's from the AU. Don't worry, guys.
Yeah.
The CNE for taking time out of your busy schedules to be here today. This is an indication of your commitment and support for the realization of the vision and aspirations of Agenda 2063, our development strategy towards unity, peace and shared prosperity. I wish to further take this opportunity to thank the President of the Council of the Republic of Togo, His Excellency Mr. Fary Azozima Nazime, and his government, as well as the people of Togo, for the warm welcome and hospitality accorded to us, to us and all the delegations ever since we arrived in this beautiful city. Your acceptance, Your Excellency, to host this first edition of the African Union Conference is the demonstration of your unwavering support and commitment to propel Africa in its next development stage as a prosperous and socially inclusive continent. Excellencies, distinguished ladies and gentlemen, it is with a deep sense of urgency and shared purpose that I stand before you today at this pivotal African Union Conference on Debt in Lomé. Our gathering here at the highest level of African leadership is a testament to the critical nature of the debt challenges confronting our continent and our collective resolve to address them head on. The theme guiding our discussions, Africa Public Debt Management Agenda, Restoring and Safeguarding Debt Sustainability, is not just pertinent. It is a matter of economic survival and a prerequisite for realizing the Africa we want as envisioned in the Agenda 2063. For far too long, the narrative of Africa's progress has been shadowed by the growing burden of debt. Over a decade, the number of African countries in or at high risk of debt distress has surged dramatically, with recent data indicating that as many as 20 low-income countries face bankruptcy or high debt distress risks. This is a very serious scenario. External shocks from the lingering socio-economic impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic and the ripple effects of geopolitical conflicts to volatile commodity prices and tightening global financial conditions have severely constrained our fiscal space. Rising global interest rates have significantly increased the borrowing costs, particularly as the composition of Africa's debt has shifted. We have seen a notable move away from traditional concessional financing towards more expensive commercial borrowing, which now accounts for over 43% of Africa's external debt. Non-Paris Club bilateral creditors have also become increasingly significant players, with one country alone holding a substantial portion of this bilateral debt. The consequences, ladies and gentlemen, is clear and devastating. An increasing share of our national revenue is being diverted to debt service payments. Alarmingly, many African countries are now spending more on servicing debt interest, let alone principal repayments, than on critical sectors like healthcare and education. This is not merely an economic challenge. It is now a human development crisis, hindering our ability to invest in our people and building resilient economies capable of withstanding future shocks. We have observed and in some cases engaged with international initiatives aiming at providing debt relief, notably the G20 Common Framework for Debt Treatment. While the intention behind the common framework to provide a coordinated restructuring mechanism for eligible countries is acknowledged, its implementation has revealed significant shortcomings. The process has been characterized by frustrating delays, complex procedures, and insufficient debt relief to truly restore sustainability. The lack of timely and equitable participation from all creditor classes, particularly the private creditors, and the absence of an automatic debt service standstill during negotiations have undermined its effectiveness and discouraged some countries from utilizing it despite their evident need. Excellencies, distinguished ladies and gentlemen, while we continue to advocate for necessary reforms to the global debt architecture and existing mechanisms like the common framework, pushing for greater speed, transparency, comparability of treatment, and expanded eligibility, we must also look inwards. Our destiny lies in our hands. This conference, therefore, in Lome is our opportunity to forge a strong, unified, and action-oriented African common position on debt. The common position must be built on the bedrock of sound, proactive, and transparent debt management at the national levels. We must strengthen, therefore, our legal and institutional frameworks for borrowing, ensuring rigorous analysis of terms and conditions, and aligning all new debt strictly with productive investments that generate returns and enhance our repayment capacity. Enhancing debt data transparency and disclosure is not just a technical requirement. It is a governance imperative that fosters accountability and allows for informed decision-making by parliaments and citizens alike. Crucially, we must redouble our efforts on domestic resource mobilization. Relying less on external borrowing requires to effectively harness our own wealth. This means broadening our tax bases, improving the efficiency and fairness of tax collections, and decisively combating illicit financial flows that drain billions from our economies annually. The operationalization of the AFCTA is a powerful tool in this regard, fostering regional value chains and expanding our internal markets, which will ultimately strengthen our revenue bases. We must also explore innovative ways to tap into domestic savings, including leveraging our growing pensions and insurance funds for long-term development financing. Furthermore, we must champion innovative financing mechanisms that offer alternatives to traditional debt, initiatives such as debt for climate or debt for nature swaps, performance bonds linked to achieving specific development or climate goals, and the strategic use of green and blue bonds, which can provide much-needed fiscal space while simultaneously advancing our sustainable development. Finally, underpinning all our efforts must be an unwavering commitment to good governance and the fight against corruption. Weak governance structures and lack of transparency are significant drivers of unsustainable debt. Strengthening, therefore, our institutions, promoting accountability, ensuring that public resources, including borrowed funds, are utilized efficiently and effectively for the benefit of our people are non-negotiable pillars of a sustainable future. The path ahead, ladies and gentlemen, is challenging, but it is not insurmountable. By strengthening our national debt management, aggressively pursuing domestic resource mobilization, embracing innovative financing, driving economic transformation through initiatives like the AFCTA, as well as advocating for a fairer global financial system and upholding the highest standards of governance, we can restore and safeguard Africa's debt sustainability. This conference, therefore, is a critical step in that journey. Let us leave Lome with a clear, unified African voice and a concrete plan of action to ensure that debt becomes a tool for development, not a threat that stifles our progress. The African Union Commission is committed, Your Excellencies, to supporting member states in implementing the outcomes of...
Welcome back.
And that, obviously, dear listeners, was to give you but a insight, specifically in terms of the conversations that took place yesterday, specifically in Lome, in Togo. And the unique particular factor that you've got to look at here is some of the key texts or some of the key words. Some guys, well, Helmut showed me something just now beforehand. Why is there this debt discussion? And this is an article from 2023.
Yeah.
Three known countries have defaulted on debts that they owe to the international borrowers where they sourced funding from.
Yeah.
Zambia, Ethiopia, and Ghana. And it seems
the debt was so high they just had to throw in a towel.
Well, but here's the thing, Hamoud. The questions that obviously come from this is Ethiopia, before that article of 2023, Ethiopia had a civil war.
Yeah. throwing COVID-19.
Throwing COVID-19.
Wait, those were going on at the same time.
During COVID-19. It actually started at, in the start, in literally in 2020, that civil war. The Zambian discussion, it seems to me, was also just a discussion about properly financing or servicing the debt. Mm-hmm. And then Ghana, it seems, is also the same issue like with Zambia. It's also a question about priorities. But before we continue, we've got an ad break.
So Ventu Beer asked Namibia to be real. And we got 500,000 responses from Racina and the other 1,400 who rock Crocs with socks. 10,000 peeps like T-Boss, whose nicknames are their real names. And 2,100 with the chops to master a braai like Arnold. It doesn't get more real than that. As Ventu, the real beer for real people, we recognize the 100% real. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than The Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Welcome back. 29 minutes left to the hour of 6. Home run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. Where are we? Responsibilities and prioritizing.
No, I finished up just in that scenario because, I mean, a civil war in the one country, and Zambia and Ghana had both been accused specifically of probably not having a plan with what to do for their public sector, for their public service. Because we hear what happens if you service too much debt? There is no money to spend on the human development sectors.
And that's where, that takes us to the social issues.
That literally translates into yesterday's discussion. Because now we understand people make these lofty discussions and descriptions of Africa is the frontier of the future, but then you hear that these African governments don't have money to invest in services.
Everyone has a plan.
Exactly, Hamad. Now, here's the scenario, Hamad. If you go to the opposite spectrum of that discussion, you remember that the one side is now the government doesn't have money to invest in the same sectors, health and education.
Mm-hmm.
Now, go to the opposite spectrum of, for example, let's say there is money, but there's no service delivery taking place, for example. When you look at that spectrum in its own right, in this side, people are fed up. On this side, on the left of the government not having money, people are saying, okay, there must be hope. You must be able to do something somewhere. And that's also what led to this discussion of beneficiation from raw materials and from minerals.
Mm-hmm.
But the question of beneficiation is always just a clear-cut discussion. Do you do the Alaska thing, which is you have the sovereign wealth fund that the state of Alaska has,
mm-hmm.
any extraction taking place in Alaska, the companies participating in that resource has to pay some sort of a dividend amount
mm-hmm.
into that fund. And every year, you've got to prove as an Alaskan that you've at least not been arrested at least once in your life by the police, and that you've been charged by a court of law. And you have to prove that you've actually been living there for 6 months in the state of Alaska in order for you to qualify. And then you've got to put your name on that list for you to receive it's just a lump payment every year from the Sovereign Wealth Fund.
Yeah.
This Sovereign Wealth Fund, Helmut, is one of the oldest, but it's also one of the biggest in the world. It's governed by the governor's office of the state of Alaska. The Sovereign Wealth Fund, Helmut, literally acts as a social safety net for the state of Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Helmut, imagine to yourself, you get at least just once in a year a tax-free payout from resources that were extracted in your country by these mining companies who paid into this fund. And every year, you just have to prove to that fund you were not locked up, you were not arrested, and you're at least in this country for 6 months continuously.
That's one way to reduce crime, like really fast.
And you get a single payment just like that every once in a year of $3,000. The highest supposedly was last year. No, the year before that, when I had that business and economic discussion based upon the sovereign wealth funds in the world.
Yeah.
The best functioning one is that state of that Alaska state one.
Mm-hmm.
And that fund, Helmut, the highest they paid was in 2023. It was $3,286, but they paid it at the end of the year. Yeah. They paid it in November.
Yeah, they paid annually.
Yeah, but they pay something annually.
Yeah.
The lowest they've paid was like $100 thing. But remember, the money is further invested somewhere. So other investment projects, but the money, the thing just keeps collecting money.
Yeah.
It just keeps collecting money. Now imagine how much you get just like that, 70,000 paid into your account. All you've got to prove is that you weren't locked up, you weren't charged by a court of law, and you've got this and this and this.
You will have a lot of law-abiding citizens
proving that fact.
Yeah.
Of course. Of course.
I'm telling you. I have
Somebody will prove it.
I have a run-in with the police. You know, I don't know my rights. I just be like, officer, what I do?
Yeah, because you can lose out on that potential payout.
You can lose out on, okay.
On that payout at the end of every year.
Are you kidding me? 3K? That's in US.
Yes, Helmut.
How much is that in Namibian dollars?
That's about 70,000.
What the heck?
Yeah, it's like one lump sum pay.
Yeah.
But imagine that particular discussion, Helmut.
Yeah.
And this is all derived just from the gas, the natural gas.
Yeah.
There in Alaska that is consumed and used by other parts of the United States. Other parts of the United States uses the gas. Now, some of these gas projects have to run through Canada as well to get to the US.
Mm-hmm.
But just, if you just look at that particular discussion, I mean, it's a talking point of, we can do this.
One point that you can hear being echoed by a lot of parties at that event was actually the question of the point of debt is not inherently bad.
Don't think of it as a bad thing.
Yeah. It's not a debt. I mean, it's not a debt. You know, it's not a debt that. Our biggest enemy is not debt.
Yeah.
It's how we manage the money we borrow. That's the problem.
Exactly. What you do with the money.
Mr. Gatete, towards the end of his speech, talked more about sealing the leaks,
closing up.
And coming up with structures that actually, that's more like leak proof in terms of mismanagement of these funds once it's being borrowed, and making sure that if it's borrowed, everything is clear through Parliament, for example.
Yeah.
How much we are borrowing and what's the primary use of that money being borrowed.
Yeah.
And at least 2-3 or maybe just 2-3 years down the line, everyone, including Parliament, we're talking oversight after oversight is making sure that the money is being channeled towards transportation, for example, if money is being borrowed to revamp the transport infrastructure, the public transport infrastructure. But now the problem is, Mozambique, you are going to have to forgive us because you guys are the perfect example.
They will always stay our joke.
$2.2 billion was borrowed.
Yeah, and they tried to hide it.
Yeah, and they had very good intentions, at least on paper over why the money was borrowed, to revamp their maritime infrastructure for both military and civilian.
Yep, and it was also that they were good, that they proposed great economic benefits specifically from buying and purchasing these vessels and ships and then installing the right mechanisms in place just for the money to be
used for private purposes by private individuals.
To buy vurpas and palaces and do shopping somewhere in the... Oh my goodness.
I'm telling you. High-end designer products coming out of Italy, France, Switzerland.
My goodness.
So the money was borrowed from Switzerland, and then you'd return it back in form of a Rolex. See, that's the biggest problem. Let's face it. Debt, yes, a debt is a problem, but that's, but that's somewhere around, like problem number five in terms of this whole financial problems that we're having.
Yep.
But the biggest one is what we're using, the money. That's the problem. You go to the IMF, Credit Suisse, and then borrow billions of dollars. And these billions of dollars, again, for the love of God, this is all in a whole different currency.
Yeah.
Now.
And they were hiding it.
Yeah. And now, after it came out.
I will just say that constantly as the punchline. they were trying to hide it.
A lot of foreign investors, once they found out that, they were like, you borrowed how much? $2.2 billion. Did you invest it in the industry you borrowed it for? No. So
why? Well, we were buying Vurpas.
Yeah. We were basically,
I don't know if they were buying Vurpas, guys, but
no,
I know.
Well, obviously.
But I read that the president's son of the time from Frelimo, homeboy was doing shopping in Europe, like you said.
Yeah.
He had a lot of European trips. He wasn't even associated to the project. He was not even associated to the project. He didn't even have a ministerial role. How did he get the money?
See, that's our biggest problem. As much as we want to punch IMF and World Bank in the face,
we have the issues here.
We first have to look in-house.
Yeah.
Is the house clean enough? The short answer is a big capital no.
No. Don't even think that it's clean. No.
No.
Yes, there's sand. You can see. Yeah, but imagine that's just the after effect of the dune that was moved beforehand.
Uh-huh. And also, look at it from the angle of, the Bretton Woods institutions have been criticized for a lot of things. One of which is structural, their famous structural adjustment policies. But look at these policies as a way of them telling you that, first of all, we are running a business here, not charity.
Yeah.
You knew this when you walked through these doors. So now, all we just want is our money back. We are going to give you the best way that you can restructure your entire national economy for you to figure out the best way to pay us the money that you owe us. And now, we don't care how this restructuring is going to impact your people at home.
Yeah.
That's your responsibility. What we want is our money back.
Yeah.
Now, if someone is telling you to do that, they're not bad.
No, they're not.
No, they're not. They're just asking for their money back. Now, even as an individual, for example, if you went to any financial institutions to borrow money, the first thing they want to look at is your current financial stance. Yeah, like, are you able to repay this money back?
Mm.
And if you owe a bunch of people money, they will tell you, yeah, no, we are not going to do that. Now, if they are telling you that we are not going to borrow you this money because you're already servicing debt from five different, financial institutions, they are not bad. They're just telling you that, well, there's a lot of financial irresponsibility on your part.
Yep.
Man, I'm glad we're having this conversation.
But Helmut, it's key. Because even if you go look at that list again that you showed me a little bit earlier, that list will tell us specifically what were the issues pertaining to each country. Well, we highlighted that Ghana and Zambia have continuously been supposedly connected as the two most debt-prone countries, supposedly, because they were just talking about three. Ethiopia is an issue in terms of they had recently had a civil war, and they've got to try and build up again from that thing.
Mm-hmm.
But all in all, you see that there are certain particular problems. And all three of these countries are not small populations.
No.
They are, especially Ghana and Ethiopia. They are not small populations. They are pretty big. So, talking from a point of why do we have this issue, is that primarily it seems, because one of the speakers mentioned there, and you also highlighted it before at the start of the discussion, Ahmed,
mm-hmm.
we are working in a financial system that we Africans did not create.
No, we didn't.
But we are studying it on our universities.
and we are still drowning in debt.
Debt. We are getting being graduated based upon these standards, these educational standards. So why has no one told the powers that be, the politicians that come into office, that get voted in or elected in,
yeah,
you stick to strict accounting principles and policies when it comes to financing a country's particular financial commitments. Then you go and hear about Mozambique. Oh man, I feel sorry for Mozambique. But
I know.
They will, that's why I said some parts of SADC. You should not look at the whole of SADC, some parts of SADC. So it's only Zambia and Mozambique. And even though Zambia's currency also improved after Hichilema got voted in,
mm-hmm.
Hichilema had to make certain particular concessions himself because he had to highlight that his salary is most, he deferred it most.
Yeah, he doesn't, I think so.
He actually lives from his business's incomes.
Yeah.
He doesn't live from the subsidies that the government has for him, except
that comes
for,
with his job.
Except for him flying.
Yeah.
But when you even look at that, the guy is a multimillionaire when he walked into office, which you can say he did not need the subsidies. He didn't need them.
Now, here's one thing. You see, the debt part, if you know, the debt part for us is coming from, different directions. We all, we have the Bretton Woods institution and also our relationship with China in terms of infrastructure is also building up a pile of debt.
Yeah.
Again, if you look on the list, now according to Business Insider's list of countries that owe China the most money, Angola is on top with $64.8 billion. That's from, now this is total debt from 2000 to 2021.
Yeah.
Yeah. Angola is in top with $64.8 billion. South Africa with $21.3 billion. You have Ethiopia, Sudan, Egypt, Nigeria, Zambia is on the 7th place. DRC on the 8th place. 9, Kenya. 10, you have Ghana. Now, again, look. It doesn't matter where you are getting the debt from. Debt is just debt. At the end of the day, that's money that you are taking on credit and you are going to have to repay it back with interest.
Mm.
It's not rocket science. Whether you're getting the debt from the IMF or whether you're getting it from the British, or from the Americans, or from just any European country, from the Russians, from the Chinese, or just from the African Development Bank, bottom line is it's debt.
Yeah.
It's money that you are taking on credit and you will have to repay it back.
Yep.
They're not, you know, it's just the same business model. You are being given money in advance that you don't have, so you can develop something and with the plans of repaying it back with interest. So then the emphasis on what you are using the debt now becomes becomes a very interesting emphasis to make. And again, it's a good thing we're having this discussion. For a lot of developing countries, one of the disadvantages we face is we have to service this debt in a currency that is way lower than the international trading currency, which is the US dollars.
So that means you've got to convert something into that international currency so that you can pay your installment per month.
Now, that's not
or
just,
per year.
That's not just the biggest problem. That's not just the problem. One of the problems, especially, servicing debt as a developing country, is that getting that money is very difficult because you are considered of high risk with all the political instabilities popping up left, right, and center across the world.
Yeah.
And because of that, chances are very high if you are from a developing country, you are going to get an amount of money. You are considered high risk. Therefore, you'll have to service it at a very high rate compared to developed countries like those ones coming out of Western Europe and North America.
Yeah.
I mean, Western Europe and North America. So just factoring in the currency on its own, it will, the currencies in that debt, a borrowing and repayment, that must be enough to send chills down the spine of every leader that's knocking at any international financial institution to borrow money in the name of his country. But, well, If your goal is personal enrichment, I don't think you have that in, you know, you have any of that in mind. Now, what happened to Mozambique? What happened to all the foreign investors? They decided to pick up their bags. Like, you know what? Who the heck are you going to tax to repay all that money? Definitely not me.
Yep.
Now you have a problem. We want to attract investors. So we, foreign direct investment, you know, that we have going on. You know, it's not really surprising that most of the foreign direct investment going on the African continent, I think it was, Gabriel that shared that document, late last year. Most of the foreign direct investment taking place on the African continent are taking place in the, in the extractive industry. So here's the thing. We're borrowing money and then misusing the money and then drowning in debt, and which will obviously result into the increase of taxes, both corporate and corporate tax and income tax. Mm. It's going to lead to that.
Yep.
So isn't that like counter investment?
Yes. It literally is.
Because no one will look at your, you know, your corporate tax going through the roof and go like, I'm gonna have to put some of my money in that. Everyone will go like, absolutely not.
No. And it's one of the particular mistakes that some, thinkers in an African continent context, even the mistake they automatically make. Because here's the thing, Helmut. What is his name? Gordon Gwana from South Africa wanted to talk about he wanted to introduce the VAT increase. Which would have had a knock-on effect into us.
Yeah.
And literally the rest of the parliament, the South African parliament, told them that's a bad idea.
You nuts.
But the other guys from the ANC thought, no, this is a wonderful idea. But the rest of the parliament, everyone else said, no, but that's a bad idea. You really didn't think about this.
No.
Because he would have had a knock-on effect into us. He would have had a knock-on effect into Botswana, into Eswatini, and into Lesotho. And we would have asked him, why did you increase a VAT? Even if we can debate philosophically that VAT is not supposed to be sold to a Namibian from South Africa. You're not supposed to suffer that VAT. But that VAT gets transferred into the final price by an importer of a good from South Africa.
They're not going to pay it.
I mean, Helmut, no, we are going to pay it.
The importer, because everyone that's selling you a product will just add that cost to the price of the product. It's the end consumer that's going to suffer. It's the same problem with tariffs.
Exactly. And it's the one thing that Trump actually has a point on.
Yeah.
That why would you place VAT on a product that was never made in Namibia? Because what value addition was contributed to the product?
Yeah.
If it was not in Namibia. The essence of value, it's in the name of the tax.
Value added tax.
Prove where the value was created. If the value was created outside of Namibia, why are we paying VAT for things? But the Namibian government uses VAT as the quickest way to make money.
Yeah.
To ensure that their stream of income is secure.
Mm-hmm.
We are actually not supposed to pay on anything that is not made in Namibia VAT, Helmut. You can only pay that 16.8%, that 16.5 import tax that exists at the border for you bringing the thing in. That'll be the VAT. That'll be the replacement tax. But now, that company that imports that product pays that amount, and then VAT gets transferred because the company selling you the product is being hit with a VAT tax. Now they've got to apply that 15% plus the 16.5 that was transferred onto them by the importing company.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're being hit double with a tariff, with a tax, which is a tariff. You're being hit double with a tax. If the thing is not made in Namibia, you can't charge VAT. Let me say that again. If the thing is not made in Namibia, you can't charge VAT. But no one is getting up and talking about the subject matter.
We're going to be bankrupt like really.
No, Namibia will be bankrupt.
Oh, yeah.
We will be bankrupt. But before we continue, Amut, we actually need a live read for this. The Vitcha University, where everyone is an achiever. Online qualifications, postgraduate programs for the June 2025 intake applications are now open. Velvita University is inviting applications into the following, into the below mentioned online postgraduate programs for the June 2025 intake. For more information and applications, you can visit our website at www.wu.edu.na. For postgraduate diploma in project management level 8, to enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF level 7 qualification in a related field, and this is a one-year blended course. For the Master of Project Management, to enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF level 8 qualification in a related field, and this is a 2 years blended course. For postgraduate diploma in monitoring and evaluation level 8, to enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF level 7 qualification in a related field, and this is a 1 year blended course. For Master of Monitoring and Evaluation, to enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF level 8 qualification in a related field, and this is a 2 year blended course. And for Postgraduate Diploma in Business Administration level 8, to enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF level 7 qualification in a related field, and this is a 1 year blended course. All programs are fully accredited by the NQA.
Welcome back. We have 5 minutes before we call it a day. So we are talking about the debt discussion on AU level going on in Togo. And it started yesterday, right? And it ends tomorrow.
Yeah.
So one thing that has been established, and I cannot sing this enough, is that our biggest problem is not one that we thought was our biggest problem. That is, you know, our biggest problem, you know, as we have always been thinking that our biggest problem was debt.
Yeah.
Yes, in a way, but our biggest problem is how we use the money that we borrow. More often we use it for personal enrichment. And you hear these stories coming out of a lot of different African countries over how, every time corruption charges are laid against, an individual, especially the high profile individuals, one thing that you find out is what they use this money on is mostly foreign, foreign high-end sports cars, high-end designer clothes, high-end, hotels, high-end restaurants all across continents that are, how do I put this? All the money is spent on high-end products that are nowhere near the African continent.
Mm.
Most of the products or the raw materials used to make the products may be sourced from Africa, but the value addition and everything is added on halfway across the continent, halfway across the planet. That's what we use we spend the money on, and then turn around and say the Chinese are bad because they are drowning us in debts. The World Bank is bad because they're drowning us in debt. The IMF are bad, but because they're drowning us in debt. Eurobonds. The Europeans are bad because they are drowning us in debt.
Oh, we're paying a Eurobond at the end of this year, supposedly. We paid something last year, and we've got to pay one again. Factor Namibia in.
The Eurobond part came in, came to me from who is this guy? There's the Zambians. Is that the Zambians? According to Business Insider, in 2020, Zambia opted to bow out of a 42.5 million Eurobond repayment, becoming the first African nation to default on its debt in the COVID-19 era. It's not like we have had several COVID-19 eras. Come on, seriously, some of these examples. But 42.5 million Eurobond repayment.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah. In euros? Okay. That's a lot of it. But most of it is coming from, most of it, like Mr. Katete pointed out, the financial transparency. If we sort that part out, we will solve more than 50% of our debt problems.
Yeah. We will, but it's not just the transparency side of things.
Mm-hmm.
It's the reporting thing, which factors back into the oversight discussion that was held by the Pan-African Parliament about oversight committees and for their ability to have oversight in the affairs of how this money gets used,
mm-hmm.
which is also contained in our Bible, which highlights specifically, you know, that oversight committees or parliamentary oversight missions are too late. Reports from the Auditor General come out too late. They come out too late. We want to know, okay, what was money spent on in 2024?
Not what, you know.
You don't want to be catching up since 2023.
2015 for the Constitutional Legal Affairs Infrastructure and the Justice Ministry, for example.
That example too, yeah. This particular subject matter speaks towards somewhere someone needs to speed up the process of you are now literally in a reasonable amount of time or framework of reasonable amount of time to say you are going to report about what the CES Council of Village Council had spent their budget from the Ministry of Urban and Rural Development on. It shouldn't be a what do they call that thing? It shouldn't be a treasure search or treasure
trove.
No. Mm-hmm. Treasure trove is something that's there. It shouldn't be a treasure hunting mission. Where did our treasures go? We don't know. But the things are still being pumped or they're still being excavated and mined.
Yeah.
So we have a plethora of solutions. We know what should be done. The question is, how much does it really translate into effective impact on the ground?
I followed, especially for the previous, for the Mugabe administration, I followed a lot of information that was coming out, especially most of it of the kids, like who's this one? One guy that kept coming up was Mugabe Jr. His social media was littered. Him and a lot of other kids coming out of the elite class of the country. Well, you know, his social media. That's one thing I like about Born Free and basically Gen Z's. Everything they use, they put it on social media. And his social media is one of those, that was littered with, fancy drinks and fancy cars and stuff. Now most of the things coming from social media, it's kind of difficult to tell whether this is, you can't look at something on social media and determine that this was born with, with criminal proceeds.
Yeah.
Yeah, but allegations.
But you just see that this guy has it.
You can just see that this guy has it. In 2012 or 2013, for example, Michael Jackson's glove was bought by, by Teodoro Ngema Obiang's, Mangwe, who is, the son of, the head of coup, the other year. I don't think that guy is still in,
isn't he the son that was arrested in Paris?
Yeah, that one.
The minister of oil or the minister of something resources. He's the guy that whose properties were also confiscated by the French authorities.
Yeah, the fancy sports cars. I think there was a Koenigsegg Lamborghini there.
And the house where he lived in Paris. Because he was living there and he was supposed to be back in the country.
Now, even though there's nothing wrong with a lavish lifestyle, now you have to understand that this, the message you are sending out there is, look, living that type of lifestyle when there's, positive economic changes at home is not going to put you on the radar of your own people. But if there's...
Wait, Albert, what? There are positive changes. Or there were none.
I'm saying if you are living that lifestyle, yeah. That level of flamboyant lifestyle, and there are positive economic changes at home,
yeah.
I don't think a lot of people will mind.
Yeah.
But if there is a lot of negative economic issues going on at home, and you are living that type of lavish lifestyle, outside your country, I don't think your people are going to look at you and go like, and look at you as an idol. A lot of them will be like, that's our money.
Yeah.
Even if it's not their money that you are using, they'll be like, explain why we don't see any change.
or any improvement.
Yeah.
On particular issues.
And then you have someone's son again on the African continent using the country's sovereign wealth fund and transferring the money in their private bank accounts. Now, you see, with problems like that is the reason why I totally agree with the point of view that our biggest problem is not debt. It's how, what we use the money that we borrow
from. Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you use the money for?
Most of it we just, you know, borrow it in the name of the state and then privately chop the money. Now you see the problem. And then the state have to be taxed to repay the debt. And you don't want them to protest. I mean, you're asking for a lot at this point.
And I mean, Helmut, that thing that happened there with, what's the country's name? Angola. When the son was arrested.
Yeah.
The guy wanted to transfer a ridiculous amount of money. Something like $400 million from the central bank.
Isn't the, you know, isn't the daughter's case still ongoing?
Yeah.
Like, well,
$400 million.
I think one thing to put in mind is connections are becoming more and more difficult because, well, there is technology. The conference isn't going. You can find it online and, you know, just educate yourself on what's going on your continent and, you know, get yourself, you know, if you have a heart problem, get yourself some of those, you know, heart medication.
Oh, high blood.
Yeah. High blood pressure, you know, just for some heads up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, with that, I know.
Did you become a doctor today?
I'm just, you know, advising. It's like, you know, someone told me that if you support some of these teams when you are watching the match, you know, just make sure that you have some high blood pressure medication. Because, you know, the guy's performance are terrible. I just don't want to mention any names because, well.
You just don't know.
No, I don't have bodyguards. Okay. Yeah.
That's fair enough, yeah.
Yeah, 6 minutes past the hour of six. We call it a day for today. That is a home run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. For me, it's until tomorrow, same time, same place on Eagle FM. You all have a good one.
And we'll see each other again, same time, same place tomorrow. Dear listeners, stay tuned for the next program. We'll be back next or tomorrow or yeah. The program. Next program, BES, is taking over right now.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than The Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published